You're listening to The Exit Strategy, a podcast that inspires open discussions about financial news and technology today. My name, Marcus Megarian, a recovering SaaS vendor, joined by my co-hosts, Ralph DeFiore and Swadek Mazumdar. And we're sitting down with startup founders, technology experts. Now let's begin.
I always like looking at the market. I usually like to start my day looking at things like the treasury yields, because it's always incredible, because it's a great way of basically seeing how the market's seeing, or at least it's kind of like the stock market is a discounting mechanism, but the interest rate yields are basically what people are expecting in the future. So the whole market speaks with that, all that stuff. But one thing that I'm curious about, and maybe you guys could help me with the answer, is that U.S. Treasury rates, like the 1 month, 6 months, it hit close to 6%. And today it's declining. And we have this debt ceiling, which I think is a complete nonsense. The debt ceiling is political theater. It's the most incredible thing, because there's no real rule behind it. And I understand that there's like the 14th Amendment or something, which discusses that there's some kind of debt ceiling, but there's no limit that the government has that they have to vote on. Like, the government could literally just issue the debt at any time. So this political theater keeps happening. And usually when you have a default, rates are supposed to go up, but rates right now are going down. It doesn't make any sense.
No, Marcus. Let's begin all over again and the recording, because rates the last 8 weeks have been going up. I could tell you, because with some excess cash in Chatsworth, I bought some bonds when the 10-year was at 4.20. I didn't buy treasuries. I bought AAA bonds.
So,
and
the 10-year now is at 3.6.
Yeah, but it got down to 3.3, right down there.
What I'm saying is, like, from the past week to today, you have rates down.
It's been going up.
They went up, but now they're down, like about 40-50 basis points in the past couple of days.
No, it didn't go down 40-50 basis points.
I'm looking at it right now. Yesterday, I the highest I saw was around 6%, 5.96%. And today, like the 6 month, for example, hit close to 6%. Like,
oh, 5. The 6 month you're looking at.
Yeah, so now, okay, it's at 5.3. But then if you look at the 10-year, it's at 3.6. And you bought it at 4.20.
Right.
But Marcus, that also has to do with the Fed action, right? Right now, the Fed is indicating that they're going to pause.
Okay,
on the interest rate hike. Right? If they didn't pause, this rate would have gone higher. So if they're going to pause, the rate is going to either stabilize or go lower. And we've, for the longest time since December, it's been 5 months now, we've been talking about the 6% benchmark, right? That after what was 5 and change, and then, 6% is what? As if we recall, a few months ago, JP Morgan, Jamie Dimon said, hey, listen, get rid of everything, political drama, as you call it, move it to 6%, and then let's see what happens. You know, we are still... We still have inflation risk, recession risk. So, they still have to. So the rates will be where they are now. If they move, it's going to be very slight, not 40-50 basis point.
Well, look, you always have theater where there's politics, right? The point
it's show
is
business for ugly people.
Yeah, the point is to exaggerate everything, so that even the brain dead will hear you, and that's what they do. That's what politicians do. But what's happening here now is the Republicans and they got the Speaker of the House, McCarthy, to they before he was elected, they backed him in a corner. And they said, you're not going to bend now. You're going to listen to us. Otherwise, you're going to be out. Effectively, that's what they told them. So they're pushing this to the brink, because we are on the brink of having too much debt and the interest payments like overwhelming us. I mean, there's you can look in on the internet. There's all kinds of analogies of we're spending
395 billion.
Yeah, we're spending more on interest than X or Y, or it's a lot of money that we're spending on interest. And the Republicans finally have had enough, and they're sticking together. And the Speaker of the House is not bending. He's got to keep his guys in line, and he's got to drive home this to Biden and the Democrats that this time is different, because the prior speakers in the Obama and Clinton era bent, and nothing got done. It was all show. So this time, you know, this is the rubber meets the road, and the Republicans are trying to help the country by stopping all this spending. So they want budget cuts, and that's what's happening.
But you know that, Ralph, this is all political drama. You know, this is, you know, if you look at, if you go and look item per item on the budget cuts, you'll see a lot of slush funds around. You know, the question is, you know, Paul Krugman said something very important, you know, talking about the 31 trillion debt. He says you can't compare it to, you know, household finance, which is true. You know, the government keeps paying off those debts, like I said, $335 billion now. But they don't have to pay off. They can keep paying. They don't have to pay off the debt. Right.
Right.
The government doesn't die, as you know.
Right. But they got to pay the interest.
You have to pay interest.
Pay the interest.
Yeah. But, you know, even if the interest is not paid, it's not it's egregious, but it's things would not stop.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. Why would
certainly, Swantek, certainly I would say
it'll add to the principal, but that's about it. Right. And I just feel
if you own a government bond and you're not being paid, the government's in default. And there goes the most reliable measure of risk. I mean, it will have so many ripple effects across the world.
True.
Don't forget that this is not only a bond, it's a risk measure.
Correct.
Against which every other asset is measured against.
Correct. All they will do is print more money to pay that off. That's what's been happening anyway.
Yeah, right? But that's that's the problem we have now is inflation.
True.
Yeah.
And that has never stopped us in the past, and I don't think it's going to stop us in the future. I just feel this debt ceiling thing should just be abolished. Bottom line, this is just Marcus is right when he started off. It is political drama. When it's the Democrats, they come in, they play this game. When it's the Republicans, they come and play this game. It's, you know, it just kind of puts a chokehold to everything that we're doing.
Well, all this stuff, all that's really doing also is pushing down these tech valuations, because the more you keep raising these interest rates and the more drama you have, you know, I keep reading over these 409A valuations, which is basically the fair market value for like tech startups. And it's incredible when you go through everything. It's like the values just keep going down, 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 and down. I think that like when you're seeing the amount of investments that are going deep into the market, I'm curious to see how this whole thing is going to wash up, you know, because with all these things happening, you keep seeing more of these articles pumping information or news about secondaries becoming a popular thing and people looking for deals or LPs looking for liquidity. I think liquidity is like is really needed in this market. And if the U.S. government is paying, you know, what is it, $380 billion, you said, per month?
$395 billion
per month. Interest payments. I mean, that's a terrible credit card bill to have.
but see, that's the difference, though. It's a government credit card. It's totally different from a household credit card.
Yeah,
you know, the government never dies, so it's not like it's going to just roll over. You know, from a credit card, from a actual point of view, for a human or for an individual, it's totally different, calculated differently,
yeah.
right, or perceived differently. But talking about the tech Valuations going down. Did you realize that Apple is almost $3 trillion market cap?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They deserve it. They're selling all that product, you know.
It's amazing, right?
What a testament to Steve Jobs, right?
What a testament to Steve Jobs. And going back 10 years, you know, when Tim Cook took over, everybody said, well, Steve Jobs is done. I mean, he's, you know, with his demise, Apple is going to really suffer. Not so, right? When you have a very strong foundation, you can keep building on the foundation. And they have been, you know, innovative. They have been fabulous from a marketing point of view. And look at the war chest that they have of cash. It's amazing.
Yeah, and you know what's even more amazing is that it's a publicly traded company. So the price is reset every day. It's constantly moving, right? And what's
every
frustrating,
day? How about every second?
Every second. But the thing is that, like, when you look at like these 409As and like you go down the unicorn list, none of those prices change. So a lot of these tech startups that have unicorn status, you have no idea what the value is today.
True. In a private market.
But yeah, we do know how these things work, right? Because we saw the whole SPAC market blew up.
Yeah.
All those companies came through that.
Right.
So I always want to know, because like what we had this massive liquidity in the market really started like when they started with COVID, right? It started pumping in trillions of dollars, giving everyone COVID relief checks and all these things. And the M&A activity was through the roof. Investments were through the roof. People were getting money hand over fist. It was the most incredible thing in the world. So of course valuations go up. But the fact is that liquidity is coming due. There's limited number of people that are getting money in their pocket. I see a ton here in France. I see a ton of these deals that are getting done, these acquisitions or quote unquote exits, but they don't put a price on it. And usually to me, when I know from a couple of the companies that went through that, they basically sold for a dollar and they just did a stock swap and that was it. They called it a day and the guy kept his job, you know? So I think that we have to look at where the only place that there's really liquidity, and I still see that as the United States.
No, I think there's liquidity in other markets as well. I think you got to look at not country-wise wide, but you got to look at also industry. Certain markets, there's a certain industry, there's very little liquidity, but certain markets there is. I mean, look at energy, huge, right? Look at healthcare, huge. But that's cyclical. That's happened before. While those technology companies were doing really well, energy companies were not doing that well. Now the tide has turned for them. So
renewables, right? Not oil and gas.
Say it again.
Renewables, right? And not oil and gas.
Right. Oil and gas. Talking about oil and gas. Look at Exxon's numbers. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
The amount of money they're making, hand over fist.
Well,
so I think it's also to liquidity also has to do with what industry we are talking about. But it's definitely, you know, from a private investment point of view, you know, that has really suffered. And that has suffered not because of lack of money, but I think it's also because of just the sentiment. At times, you know, when you invest, you feel good when the market is doing better, even though privately, you know, these companies can be valued as a public company can. But, you know, from a comparative point of view, you know, they do value them.
What's frustrating about private companies is that, like, you set a valuation. But the thing is that, like, with a public company, the stock market moves as it moves. So the market prices things. If a stock is trading at 20, it drops to 10. And not enough buyers come in to bring it up to 20, it just means that there's no interest. Because if it was at $10 and people saw value and thought that the fair market value was 20, they'd obviously buy to double their money. But with the private market valuation, I get into so many debates with people about what the value of the company is. It's always like the people even hire like these big four accounting firms. And like they'll always, and I don't always agree with what these guys are doing.
Mm,
you know, right. Like, I mean, you could price things any way you want. you know, you could move things like discount rates or have assumptions that are different or have the terminal rates at like a certain number. Like we could just increase the terminal rates, lower the discount rate. It pumps up the long-term valuation of the company, which gives you a higher IRR and all that stuff. Then what assumptions of EV to revenue multiples do we take? You know, like it's all based on just assumptions, but it's nothing until you actually get out and do that exit.
Right. Well, remember what Buffett said, that in the short term, the stock market is a voting machine. In the long term, it's a weighing machine.
Right.
So I could give you examples of, you know, I've got one company in my portfolio. It went down to 4 and change with speculation about a patent they had and another company that wanted to produce a generic version of that medication. And it was just driven into the ground. And here we are like 6-7 months later, and the court said, no, you can't do that, not until the patent expires in 1929. So now the thing's selling close to 9 from 4, more than doubled. So, you know, when you're getting involved in stocks, you're trying to predict the future, which is very difficult. I highly recommend index funds.
For those who are not very active or don't want to be active, index
for everybody, funds. For everybody. Well, there have been so many studies showing.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
The average manager can't beat the market on a consistent basis. That's, you know, some people do it. And you know, the other thing is the managers that fail, they drop out of the population and their results thereafter are not included. You know, so the failures are not included in the studies of manager performance. So it's look, you're trying to predict the future, which is very difficult. And diversification is key, and you're not going to get more diversification in a stock market portfolio than in an index fund. And probably a global index fund is probably the best.
True. So, no, I agree with you. But as human nature.
Oh, yes. We human do, nature.
Yeah, we do. And there's a lot of, psychologists that have spoken about that. How we draw certain satisfaction by being involved in the individual play.
Right.
Right. And index fund is pretty simple. You know,
well, we're all dreamers, Swatek. You know,
we are. We're nothing wrong with that. I saw a data somewhere. I don't remember accurately, but they had said S&P 500 in the last 10 years, if you had put 5,000 every month, it would be what it would have not doubled, like tripled your money.
Right.
Right.
Because the Fed was so loose.
Yeah. Yeah. And even now it would have been doing okay, right? Because you keep adding on,
when the market's lower. Yeah.
Lower or higher. You're just adding on, right? You're just adding on, an incremental amount, the same incremental amount every month.
Right.
That's probably a great way of going. Actually, Warren Buffett always talks about that. He talks about how individuals should always rely on index funds.
Right. Well, plenty of pension funds do it, you know. So what about China and their massive internal debt? Is that something we should get into?
Absolutely. Yeah? We are talking about U.S. debt. Why not China debt, right?
Right. Good point. Yeah, you know, the worrisome thing is when countries have internal problems, they like to create external problems so the people get behind them,
Right.
the politicians.
And get distracted.
Yes, yes. That's a bit worrisome. But the other thing I heard, which is always in the back of my mind, somebody said, in your country, when things aren't going well, you attack the president, right? And they said, but in China, when things aren't going well, we look up to the president to do something about it. So, and certainly in China, you can't attack the president. They won't even allow a comparison to Winnie the Pooh. Have you heard about that? Some people think he looks like Winnie the Pooh, so they've outlawed Winnie the Pooh in China.
I read that somewhere. Yeah, that's being very insecure.
I have not heard that. I used to love Winnie the Pooh in the '80s as a kid, but I don't know. What shocked me when I was reading over a couple of these articles about China was the fact that they were discussing, like, you know, we were saying, like, the debt rate over there is extremely high. I mean, in terms of debt to GDP, it seems pretty big, but the average wage for this person that they were talking to was $228 a month. And what's shocking to me was that it was lower than, like, Brazil's minimum average wage, or minimum wage even. And I thought that China would have, like, much larger salaries or people doing, I mean what it means to be middle class in one country versus another is very different. But this person was a hospital worker, an orderly, you know, wearing the scrubs and everything, etc. I just thought it was interesting that that's what it was. But what these articles are talking about is, like, how that people in China are actually having delay in salary payments by up to over 10 days.
Right.
You know, and it's just incredible because, like,
that's one particular town. I'm not sure it's countrywide, but it's an indication of the trouble that these cities and towns are in because of over borrowing. I think in that particular town also, it was a coal town and the coal is running out. So they're having, not only they've incurred large debts, but their source of income is disappearing day by day.
Well, obviously it's not a federal thing, right? It's a localized issue.
Right. So
right.
I take that. Do the Indian states, are they careful about their debt?
They have started being a little careful, but wasn't so, I would say, 10 years ago.
Right.
Debt is, from a cultural point of view, for individuals, debt is not something, it's like a taboo, right? You don't like debts. But for a government, it's different. Even though now, individually, people have started carrying debts, but it's a very low ratio to your income.
Right.
Servicing right. those debts are pretty, pretty simple.
I think that's true of China as well on an individual basis. But
from a government
point of view, what happened, you know, from the end of World War II up until China opened, what, in the late 80s, early 90s, there wasn't much development in China. And suddenly you had this burst of growth. And I guess it was like somebody getting a new credit card. They could finally go out and spend a lot of money. They saw the growth coming. They saw other cities. They wanted to compete with those other cities. And they just borrowed themselves into a corner.
Well, they really became the manufacturing hub for the world.
Right.
Cheap manufacturing hub. And that brought in a lot of money for them. which they may
have. And what are you saying? That's changing now?
Yeah, I think
sure, people are going to, we know of situations where companies are going to India to get production. Apple, for instance, is big on going to India and away from China.
Yeah.
And
so they're hedging the bets. It's not one country bet. It's multiple country bets.
Yes.
Apple is in Mexico. Apple is in Vietnam. Again, India has a big talent pool, a lot of resources, you know, very tech savvy people. So for them, it's quite a good position to be in.
Hmm.
And then the English language being a universal language that's spoken there, it's a good option to have. And a good alternative to China. And so it's just not, I see that in the automobile space. I see that in a lot of, India's always been very big in the apparel space. That's becoming even bigger now. China had overtaken that with, you know, cheap labor. And then the labor went up in China. So, you know, once the wages go up, you know, your cost also goes up. There is obviously the mass production skill sets and efficiency. China still does that really well. India still has a lot of catch up to do on that, but it's moving. You know, with technology, things are moving very, very quickly.
Well, I take a lot of Indian regional political sectors, cities, what have you, they're installing critical infrastructure now, right? I mean, transportation, that type of thing.
So
trying to make the...
Yeah, transportation is huge. They have realized one thing. In order to do commerce, in order to do business, you will have to make mobility very, very efficient. So airports, railways, road transportation, you know, I mean, everybody's linked everywhere. I'm looking at a company that's doing the first mile and the last mile connections. So infrastructure wise, there has been a lot of emphasis on roads. As a matter of fact, I have to find out, I just read an article yesterday, I want to verify that, where they're saying they're taking so much loan on this from World Bank and other banks, it's going to be difficult for them to pay back. I just want to see if that's accurate or not, or it was just an opinion of one author. But the point is, there has been a lot of infrastructure improvements because they feel, you know, mobility is important in order to do efficient commerce. And I see that when I go to India, you know, I was there, you know, about 2 weeks ago. You can travel. You can book a ticket and travel by air or rail or even drive, which was, I wouldn't say impossible, but it was a huge challenge maybe 10, 12 years ago.
Right. Right. Certainly all the Indian people that have worked in the tech industry, the pharma industry outside of India has to be a tremendous benefit for India, you know, to come back and start businesses or fund businesses there or to create trade. You know, China, I guess, has the same thing, because when the communists took over, the Chinese nationalists, they went to Singapore, they went to Taiwan, they spread out in Asia. So it's a similar thing, but I think maybe the Indians are more global. What do you think?
Yeah, they are. But in India, some of this industry, when you mention tech came from India to a large extent, the knowledge-based tech, the soft tech, not the hard tech, the soft tech. You know, hardware design was more prevalent here in certain European countries, Israel, for example. But soft tech came from India. For large part, but India in general has a lot of organic built out, you know, for example, pharma. India has a lot of universities, has a lot of colleges, a lot of engineering and technical colleges that produce many, 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 people that join the talent pool. So there's a lot of organic build out as well. It's not necessarily people that gain, experience from here, go back and start stuff there. I think that's a small percentage of that. But as far as resources, as far as money, that definitely holds true. I know a lot of funds, entrepreneurs who sold their company, started funds, and they're focused just on India. What is that, Marcus?
This came out while we're on the discussion here, the Trump's criminal trial over the porn star payoffs. I said for March of 2024, just before the election.
Good timing.
No
right?
One did that on purpose. Nobody did that on purpose. That was totally a coincidence. Totally coincidence. Within the 6 months of Election Day.
Yeah. You know what he should do? They should leave him alone first. We are wasting too much time. And he should, swallow a bitter pill and say, you know, forget 2024. He's 74 years, 76 years old. Why does he need this? You know,
I'll tell you what he should do is buy a law firm.
Oh, man, that's going to be bankrupt, too.
No, he's got all these suits.
Yeah, he's never going to pay them. You know, how does a law firm survive, right? Somebody has to pay them. He's never going to pay them. He's not been a good payer, as I know it. Or I've learned, you know, from different resources. That law firm's not going to do too well with one client and not being paid. But Marcus, you know, it surprises me how you go after all these scandalous kind of news while we're in a very serious conversation about the world, you know, economies.
I think that you have to, the older I get, the more I start learning about how to avoid the noise. Like, I don't have a TV in my house. And the most important reason is because it's too distracting. And it's like, you keep hearing this, every single channel basically says the exact same thing. And it's very frustrating. Instead of focusing on exactly what I need to do. Like, for example, we picked up a new customer about 3 weeks ago. In 3 weeks, we already have like three potential buyers. And it's because, like, I don't distract myself. I focus exactly on what we have to do, exactly who the people have to be. And if I start focusing all the noise, you know, I even made a mistake today where I go to the customer. It's like, look, I have the call tomorrow with this buyer. And what happened is then he starts asking me all these like 20 questions about how you're going to do it. Like, explain it to me, because the buyer is a NASDAQ listed company. So I'm just like, okay, this is what it could possibly be. And it was the dumbest thing I could have done. Because then the seller, he knows how to run his tech company, but he has no idea what it is that, like, if I tell him, look, you get part cash, part debt, part equity, earn out, and all these things, and these structures that you could use, and a part of the structures is to be sticky for you to stay for the next 2 to 3 years. You know, and all it did was just confuse the person even more, you know? So like, that's why I don't like reading like into too much stuff, is just because like, it just distracts you, you know? And I think a guy like Trump, when he gets into all these crazy things, he seems pretty calm when he's on stage, because it was, remember like in the last election in 2016, between Trump and Hillary, like she was like fainting and she was like passing out because it was just too much pressure between everything. And like, there's none of that being discussed about this guy.
Well, he likes.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is he likes Big Macs and junk food.
Yeah. And what's there was a podcast I was listening to it was Bill Maher. Bill Maher is up on stage and he's like, you know, everyone, there's a sexual scandal with every famous person, but nobody knows about Trump. it's like there's tons of scandal surrounding this guy, but there's no scandal in everything they do. There was that article that came out this week or last week about how the whole Russian collusion thing and all this stuff was made up lies by the Democratic Party, and it came out by the DOJ and all these things, and it's just crazy.
Yeah, I read that as well. But that, you know, that really discredits, you know, not only just individuals, but parties as well, to the extent, you know, what they will do and how far they'll go to create these kind of stories.
Yeah. Well, look, we could talk about this forever. This was not even planned in the podcast, but it's about that time that we part ways, because the next episode we have, who do we have, Swadek?
We have Andrew Heitzman, right?
He's the VC guy, right?
He's a VC guy from EcoBust. Yeah, they invest in a lot of plant-based and food, sustainable food companies.
Yeah.
Conversation, because there's a lot of stuff going on in that space.
Well, I'm excited. I'm excited to learn more.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Ralph Swadek, it's great to see you guys. Catch up very soon.
Very good. Take care, Ralph. Take care, Marcus.
Bye-bye, Swadek.
Okay, I got to run.
Call that guy.
I will.